on the topic about parenting or child-parent relationships. If you haven't been here in the last couple of weeks, or if you just never got the full list, these are all of the verses that deal with that topic in the book of Proverbs. I had recommended that you put this list next to chapter 10, verse 1, just because chapter 1, verse 8 would be cluttered from, you know, previous class where we made a list of scriptures. But here they are. There's a total of 25. Last week I said there was only 24, but I forgot that I was holding one in reserve that we'll get to tonight, you know, at the end. And so there's actually a total of 25 there. We have gotten through the great majority of these down right here. And so if you are unable to jot all these down right at this moment, you know, don't worry about it. We'll put them back up maybe at the end of the class and make sure you get those. The 14 of the 25, so more than half, are addressed to the children about the shame and the suffering. Again, I forgot that end. That they can cause parents. So I made a point last week that it's really very interesting that Solomon would do this, and there are two things necessary if those 14 passages are going to be effective. And they are, number one, that the child would have some sort of respect for the Bible. They would appreciate the scriptures. And the other, that they have some sort of respect and love for the parents themselves. And all 14 of those are statements that are saying to the children, let your parents rejoice in your existence. You know, let them be glad that they brought you into this earth. And so, in effect, you know, pay them back for the good that they have done for you throughout your life. And so, interesting that Solomon spends out so much time, you know, with those kids, trying to help them to appreciate that they really ought to care about their folks and what grief or joy that they would bring to them. Just love that picture on the right. You can tell it goes back to about the 1940s, I think, and I found that somewhere years and years ago. So I tucked it away and put that up every chance I can. But these will be the verses, and just a few of them, that we had not gotten to yet. So everybody open to chapter 27 and verse 11. In 27:11, be wise, my son, and make my heart glad, that I may reply to him who reproaches me. Well, that's exactly what we were just talking about. This is one of those 14 of the 25 passages that's addressed to the children themselves. And Solomon and or any parent would be saying, be wise, my son. Make my heart glad. A wise son makes a heart glad. As a matter of fact, Rachel Saturday just did it for me. She mentioned my son. Immediately, it was my heart to. I was glad that she did it in the context of a time that he went visiting in Indonesia, they stayed several weeks, I guess it was, and he did some preaching and some teaching while he was over there. Well, boy, that just feels pretty good for a parent to have a son that cares about the gospel, cares about his God. But that last part, that I may reply to him who reproaches me. Isn't that interesting? Your children are an argument that you can put on the table when somebody tries to criticize you. Somebody reproaches me. You go, yeah? Well, how are your kids doing? It's kind of a parent context right here. Now, I don't know if Solomon had some particular, you know, thing in view, some particular circumstance in view, maybe something that had actually had happened to him, but it sounds like a very general statement that you have proof of your own character and of your own success in life and therefore status in the community so that you can lay this down as an argument. If my children are wise, then that reflects on me. And you come up, you know, and got your beef, whatever it is, you're telling me I'm some kind of foolish, you know, moron. Well, okay. Oh, but look at the kids. So here is the best argument, maybe, that you can adduce to show all the world, without ever even opening your mouth, that you have your act together. It is reflected in the kind of lives that the children lead. Okay, any comment or question on that one? Anybody? All right, let's go to chapter 28 and verse 7. Now, I'm planning to do some coughing tonight. I had an allergic reaction here this morning to just, you know, some stuff in the air. And I'm actually allergic to cats, and I spent an hour in a room with a cat today. So my lungs are a little messed up. But I'm really not sick. You know, it's just that, but it cramps my lungs. So a little bit of coughing likely to happen there. All right, chapter 28, verse 7. He who keeps the law is a discerning son, but he who is a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. You know, on this one, I have to look to Jerry, you know, and some of the other men in the congregation maybe to sort of help me out with this one, because every so often, Solomon will set forth a proverb where the first half and the second half, to me, seem to be just kind of dissonant, you know, like they don't really fit together. And this is one of those. It's hard for me to kind of crack the code in Solomon's mind there, what he had in mind. It's like I can understand the first part, and I can understand the second part, but with keeping the law or being a companion of gluttons, now I don't know, maybe thanks to Mayor Bloomberg in New York City, we will, you know, begin to get more laws against gluttons. You know, New York City did away with the 16-ounce Big Gulp I got here not too long ago. And so, however you might feel about that, you know, here's a guy who at least, you know, was trying to say, maybe folks, you ought not to overdo it, but I'm not sure it all was any of his business, you know, but still, a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. Gluttons are what? What is a glutton? Say it again, louder.
Greedy?
Yeah, I don't think you're saying it's right. Greedy overdoes it, but with regard particularly to what? With regard to food. You know, a glutton is somebody who can't restrain themselves and they overeat. Now, Jimmy's got the solution here on how that relates to the law, right?
Riotousness.
Okay. Well, there you go. That would be much broader than just the very narrow focus, you know, of gluttony. And I don't know about the word. I'm not, you know, good with words in the Hebrew, you know, so much. But, Mark, let's have you go first.
Chapter 23,
everybody. Yeah, and that is just the best answer I've heard, I think, Marge's right now is suggesting, if you've got a problem with self-control when it comes to the dinner table.
And drinking.
And with drinking. Is that the only problem you've got? What is your problem?
Self-control.
It is self-control. If you have a problem with self-control in one area, then what? You probably have problems with self-control in other areas. If you have trouble with self-control, then legally you may find yourself getting into some trouble. Okay? And that's about as close to connection as I've seen. I love Carol's next.
In mine, it says, he who keeps the law is a discerning son. And if you look at two, one's discerning and one's not. They're opposites then. So you're not using your wisdom, you're not checking things out, you're not paying attention, you're just whoopee.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's true. Again, you're going to the same root. This is an individual with problems, whether it's in one category or the other. Get a hold of yourself. You're not going to have trouble in either category. And Bill was next. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that really fits well here. You're not very wise at all.
Okay, maybe that's where that uninspired proverb, glutton for punishment, came from. You know, it's right here. If you're a glutton, you're going to be paying for this. you know, pay for it maybe in other areas aside from just what it might do to the flesh. Jerry, you have something on that one? Nope. Okay. Observe the Passover, Faye. Okay. Yeah, and you know, Faye has brought up obviously an important question too. When this says law, should we narrow it down and limit ourselves to civil law, you know, criminal law? And Faye says, no, you know, it's God's law. You have responsibilities before God and revealed in the law that deal with controlling the flesh and its lusts. We are supposed to be a people who have gotten a handle on ourselves. We can control ourselves. And so if you are a glutton, as I understand what Faye is suggesting right here, you know, then your relationship, not to civil law necessarily, but to God's law, is in jeopardy. It's in trouble here. I get the gist of it there, I guess? Okay, anybody else? That is one of the oldest and most difficult questions that I've ever heard. Some of the best people I've ever known, you know, spiritually, really have a problem in that regard. Now, the direct answer, in case you didn't hear it, Greg asked, you know, what is the church's responsibility toward a glutton? The biggest part of that problem, the reason why, I don't think I've ever said anybody in all my years, said anything to anybody in all my years, is because... Well, let me ask it this way. Is the only reason that someone might be overweight that they overeat? That's not the only reason. And so there's a sort of a presumption there that has always caused me to hang back anyway. You know, I don't know. And so I've always let the scriptures speak for themselves in that regard and never felt like, you know, I personally needed to wade in on somebody, you know, because I was assuming that they had a self-control problem. I don't know that they do. And I found myself in that position a lot of times. You know, should the church do something about covetousness? Greg, we're going to hire you to take care of all the covetous problems. Whoa. You know, see, how do I recognize that? And so my view of it has always been, I think there are just some things that are very, very personal and are supposed to be that way. And so you read those verses, you decide whether or not you have a problem in that regard. You're the only one that's going to know what the circumstances are. I really can't judge, and so I just don't. I let the scriptures speak for themselves on that one. I observe the Passover on that one. Now, you know, if that's a mistake, then maybe one of these days I'll figure that out and do something about it, you know, but I just never had the confidence that I could just confront somebody like that. Anybody else? Say Elaine again. Elaine, I'm sorry, I can't hear you back here, right?
I was just going to say, if you're reading the scriptures, and I'm sure it's been preached on, these different topics, so you've probably heard it, and like you said, it's not good. Well, you know,
see, that's exactly it. There's just a lot of sins that we're going to address in our classes, we're going to have preached on, you know, you're going to read it in your own Bible, you'll discuss these things with your friends, and, you know, that's pretty powerful to hear it from the Word of God Himself. And so, you know, everybody's getting the whole of the message. Some of these things they're just going to have to deal with on their own. Anybody else? Okay, let's go to chapter 29 today. Now, I listed these on different lines, but there's actually a total of three that are in chapter 29. So if you want to make a little bit of a list, you know, with commas and verse numbers, we'll take them one at a time, but be aware there are going to be three in chapter 29. First, one of these is in verse 3. A man who loves wisdom makes his father glad, but he who keeps company with harlots wastes his wealth. Isn't that just like the gluttony one? Only it used a different category. And so, you know, before we had the law and gluttony, and this time we have father glad keeps company with harlots wastes his wealth. The prodigal son. It's exactly that. So there you are.
The good brother and the brother that was unwise, the father would love them both and brought his son back.
Everybody knows the story. And so here's this young man who later Jesus would use in parabolic form as a perfect example of what this is saying. A man who loves wisdom is such joy to his father. He just makes his dad so proud. But he who keeps company with harlots wastes, and it's curious here, in the New American Standard, I've got his wealth. Do any of you have that pronoun, his? Okay. Is it in italics? Yeah. What's that mean? It's not in the original verse, is it? What it says is, he wastes wealth. Does it specify whose? No, it really doesn't. And what do you learn from the prodigal, Bill? Whose wealth got wasted?
His father's.
Yeah, it was his father's wealth. And he gave it to the son. But did he want to get it back?
No.
Apparently not. It all got left in the foreign land over there, you know. And so the wealth got wasted because this son keeps company with harlots. Well, we had a whole class, you know, dealing with adultery. I've spent more than one. Solomon spent considerably more than 25 verses on that topic, didn't he?
This verse here is very reflective of the verse where Jesus is talking to those who say, well, when you come to me and you never knew me, and they say, Lord, Lord, and he says, I never knew you. Because you aren't really one of us.
Amen. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, I hope I don't feel like I'm rushing too much, but I am. don't mean to cut anybody short, but here we go. Look at verse 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Now, I want you all to remember this one. In a minute, we're going to come back to it. I told you, before I was going to go through these in the order in which they appear in the book. But there is one that's going to be out of order. And that one is only two verses away, or another verse away. But it's going to relate on this. So let's just kind of bury this one, in our heads right now. The rod and reproof give wisdom. We don't need to discuss that topic again. We talked about that. The rod is corporal punishment. A reproof is a verbal punishment slash, instruction. But they do both bring wisdom. The second part of the verse there says that a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Does anybody have a footnote on what that second part is literally, how the Hebrew is literally translated? You have any note? Here you go, Sarah. Left.
No guidance.
Left to himself is what it literally says. Now, left to himself is a little bit broader than the idea in the New American Standard, but it covers that idea as well. If a child gets his own way, or a child is left to himself, see if you can give me a couple of words that would be descriptive of what he didn't get. If he's left to himself and he gets his own way, what is it he has not been getting?
Guidance.
Instruction.
Discipline.
Knowledge. See, the parents, who dropped the ball? The parents dropped the ball here. You left the kid to his own devices. You didn't rise up and take care of solving what is by nature a problem. What did we learn last week, you all knew already, is bound up in the heart of a child. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. That's necessary. It's absolute. They come into the world knowing nothing. They are growing up trying to figure this thing out. They are foolish to the max because they have no experience. And if you don't help them with this, including the rod as well as reproof, they are not getting the discipline, they are not getting the restraint, they are not getting the instruction, they don't get this knowledge, they don't get this wisdom. Who failed here? The parents failed here. Do not let children have their own way. Because their own way is inherently what?
Foolish.
Okay? It's inherently so. So it's just, they're doomed, brother. They're doomed if you're just going to ignore them and hope that, you know, the television and their friends are going to straighten this up, you know, and fix this problem. It's not going to do it. It's just not going to happen. So really an important verse right here. This one says that you've got an individual that needs wisdom because foolishness is their nature. Rod and reproof will give it to them. Take away the rod and reproof, and that is best described as he either gets his own way or is left to himself. What that results in is a mother who just can't go out in public and hold her head up anymore. It reflects on the parents. That's the way it will always be because that's the way it's supposed to be. Now, one next time we've done this, you know, probably 10 times already. Are there exceptions? Children that are broken, they're psycho, there isn't anything you could do about it. They murder their parents. You know, and it's not the parents' fault. Yes, that sometimes happens. But the majority of the time, the purpose of the Proverbs, give us the overview, the way things normally work, kids only get there because the parents let them go there, let them have their own way. I thought I saw another hand. Carol's yours. And haven't you all seen it? Like kids that treat their parents like dirt, and they just say the most horrifying things. There's just absolutely no respect. There's no respect because the parents didn't earn it. They didn't require it. They didn't demand it. They did not impose it. That has to happen at the beginning, not at the end. Okay? Over here was another one. Anybody? Okay, last one in chapter 29 is only two verses later. 17, correct your son, and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. He will give you comfort, and he will delight your soul if you give him correction. But again, we talked about this at length a week ago, last week. If you love yourself more than him, so you cannot get over the difficulty of instructing a child properly, including the rod and reproof, see, then the shame comes that we've had in so many of these passages, and ultimately, you know, it's the most uncomfortable life you can imagine. I don't know, you know, how many people. I had a friend in, you know, many years, a member of the church going back, I guess I've known him since 1979. Okay? And I won't say any more, you know, except that the kids were a disaster. Just a disaster. And up to and including jail, you know, and all the rest of that. And I look at this circumstance, and it breaks my heart. It just breaks my heart. It breaks your heart. It breaks everybody's heart. Maybe it's so that they were, you know, just some kind of crazy, and, you know, nothing could have been done about it, but I doubt it. You know, and so his life is miserable. Every time the phone rings, what's he expecting? More trouble. What have they done now? And I mean really serious, serious stuff. You know, you get to the point where you're just afraid to even answer the phone. It's so bad. Well, Solomon is just trying to preserve and spare, you know, all of us. Okay, any thought on all of those? There's one more that I took out of order that I wanted to hit on here tonight. Okay, everybody back to chapter 22. Of all of the verses on parenting, this is no doubt the most famous. This is the one, I guess, that especially among us as Christians, is the best known. Books are written on this. I think more than one by Christians, members of the Church of Christ, not these others. I know my wife took a class from a lady that was entitled Train Up a Child, probably 30 years ago, before we even had kids, I guess, up in Kirkland. Now, chapter 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. You ever heard that before? Okay. Now, we look at that verse translated like that, and it gives parents a lot of comfort, a lot of confidence, doesn't it? If I do the job, train him up in the way he should go, when he's old, it's going to be okay. Now, raise your hand if you've ever said to anybody, well, I know your kids are really a wreck right now, but you train them up in the way they should go, and rebellion is the name of the game, you know, for all kids and everything, but, you know, have hope that when they're old, they'll get over all of that, they'll remember your instruction, they'll come back home just like the prodigal. You ever done that? I've done that. Man, I'm not going to stop either. You know, I think that's good instruction. Kids aren't actually rebellious. They do have to make their own way. I've seen a lot of people that I think I knew well enough to say they were truly excellent people, and I spent enough time with them to say that they did discipline their kids. And then the kids are nightmares. You know, I just don't know what. You know, but, you know, that's the case. And then later, things get better. Okay? Billy, got a comment there.
Yeah, when I was in high school, always a handful of people that were on the intercom every day getting called up. Constantly in trouble. A few years later, put this guy over the intercom. 2 years later, I wound up working with one of these guys. And, you know, growing up, I had a family by then. And he said he was one of the strictest fathers that he ever knew. I don't know how he was raised, but when he was raised,
a lot of guys figured that out, you know, the hard way, I guess. They didn't realize they shouldn't want this to happen to me. One of the funniest comics I ever saw, and I'm sure you've all seen some form or another, just a single panel, you know, in a newspaper. And it shows a mother looking down at this little girl, you know, who's 5 or 6 years old. And she says, I hope you have kids just like you. Yeah. And then, you know, when you get old enough to have those kids, you learn a bunch of things, you know, that you didn't learn earlier. One of my favorite Mark Twain sayings, you know, was him saying, you know, the older I get, you know, I realize how much my parents have learned. Yeah. Well, I think you're the one doing the learning here. Okay, now, let me pull the rug out from under you for a minute. And you may already know this, you know, so I won't be surprised if you do. But I've got a footnote in my Bible that demonstrates there's another way to translate this. And it's not with the word should. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. I've got a footnote, and my footnote says, literally, now remember, what I'm about to read to you is actually closer to what the text actually says. This is a more literal reading. Literally, it says, train up a child according to his way, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, what does that say? It says nearly the opposite. Okay? Now let's chew on that for a minute. Because I'm the kind of a guy who just about 99 times out of 100, I'm going to prefer the literal reading, aren't you? No matter how dear that passage may have gotten to me in the preceding 34 years, you know, the literal rendition is what Solomon said. And many times, you know, a less literal rendition shed light on the subject is perfectly acceptable. It's well within the bounds, you know, of what he did say. In this case, though, this changes things a lot. Jimmy, what do you got? And Jimmy touched on something really, really important, because you do have to be careful here. I have heard people use this verse also, you know, as if there couldn't be an exception. And that's just not the case. You know, we talked about that a few minutes ago. So you have to be careful how you use this. But go ahead, Carol. What do you got?
Well, I was just wondering in the literal, where it says, according to his way, if they have looked at capitalizing that H on his,
in
referring to
God. So it would refer to God. Okay. Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I've just never asked it and never seen it, you know, in a commentary or anything either. And I suppose it could be a pronoun would ordinarily refer, you know, back to a preceding noun. There's nothing in the context that would say to me that God was anywhere, you know, in there, so that the pronoun should point back to God. He's not there. So, you say, has anybody looked into it? I know I have not, but, you know, it would be hard for me to translate it that way, just because God is not in the context. Okay, Junior, you're next, I think. Well, you know, I've never heard that in churches of Christ, though I'd be very close to that. I'm sure you are, too. Everything that we've been looking at here, you know, shows the reflection that the children have on the parents and how the parents did. That's the way the New Testament uses it, too, you know, beyond all doubt. Okay, let's go here first, and then I'll come back to you, Bill.
Well, to me, this is saying you train up the child in his way, so you're giving in to the child, giving in to everything that he wants. And he will not depart from his spoiled ways.
Exactly. Now, remember what I said, tuck that one away? Go back to chapter 29 now. Look at chapter 29 and verse 15 and see if it doesn't actually say this alternative reading, as was just elucidated there. In 29 and verse 15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way, what? He's shamed to his mother. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, I want you to think about this, because my personal view is that this alternative reading, the one that you'll never find in the main page, you know, of a translation, but it's only over there in the margin, I really think it's the more accurate translation. I also think that we've probably taken the alternate reading, the one you normally see in there, and we've made too much out of it. This is not some kind of inviolable truth that if you train up a child the way he should go, it's impossible for him to throw it off. Kids can be rebellious, though they have the finest parents on the planet. Somebody just said this a few minutes ago, maybe Zelene back there, but they're going to make their own decisions. You know, eventually they come into their own, and you don't have the control, even the influence maybe, anymore. Train up a child in his way. Train up a child in the way he would go. In other words, as you just said, you keep giving that child what he wants, you are training him to be selfish, self-centered, narcissistic, to expect the whole world to bend to him, and when it's done, he's not much amenable to the laws of God or man. He's not much, you know, into restraint and discipline and self-control. He's an individual that always got his own way. What do we call that in a single word? Spoiled is what we call that. The perfect word for it. You know, they've been ruined. And they've been ruined by this doting parent, this weak parent, who just let the child have his own way and trained them up in that. Okay, now, always we should say for last, the voice of experience, Rachel is the teacher among us. She's got a little laboratory.
Go ahead. easy to give them their own way. And so they have, I would say, the young person, you have to be a young mother, a young wife, you have to be taught that loving actually is doing something that's hard.
Yeah, they're acting like they're sacrificing themselves to let their children do that, and they're not. They're sacrificing their children.
Amen. Both comments. Okay, Tabor.
I have a phrase that describes that, and it's child worship.
Okay.
They worship them.
Yeah. Now, by the way, we've got some parenting material on CDs that's in the library here. Number of the women, a lot of women, I think, you know, have worked on getting all that catalog and all the books in the library set and everything. Don't forget that's back there. If I'm not mistaken, one of those CDs has something to do on the title with the phrase helicopter parents. What is a helicopter parent? Hovering over the child, everywhere they go. But what they're really doing, you know, is not influencing the child at all. Just running around trying to keep from falling off the cliff, you know, but still letting them have their own way, not really exerting that discipline. So chew on that. At least I just want you to think about it. 22:6 may be the single most famous parenting passage in, you know, the Bible, but most people think that it can only be translated one way, and that it is a word of comfort to the parent, that even if your child is a wreck right now, they may turn out all right because you trained them up in the way they should go. Well, first, that assumes that you did it. You know? But secondly, this passage can be translated, train him up so that he has his own way, or in the way that he would go, and they're gonna, you're just making that permanent. Now, a moment ago, though, I said that first one, you know, is real comforting, you know, to parents. While the second one is not exactly comforting, it certainly is as powerful a way, of saying the exact same thing. Either way you read it, what does a parent come away with? What happens here is permanent. Okay? So, either way you translate it, just know it's permanent. And you're the one that's going to have to answer for it. Now, they make their own lives and all the rest of that. I understand. Good kid, you know, parents can have bad kids, all the rest. I understand all of that. But, you know, this is a verse that says, get serious about this. Because you're not just playing with a few years right here and then you get to look, you know, slough it off. You're talking about something that is magnificently dangerous. They can destroy your whole life. We saw that in the first class. Or they can bring you joy and pride and comfort and argument, you know, for people that would criticize you. You get so much out of that package if they turn out okay. But you, as a parent, have to really get involved. You can't do this easily or by default or by proxy. You're going to have to go in there and fight the fight. It's just going to be a lot of hard work, and hopefully it'll pay off in the end there. You don't take God's advice, and I expect that it will, but don't, and you will pay for this. So in the end, it's just a very, very powerful way of saying, get your act together. Now, hand over here, I think. There it is. Go ahead. Would have been a better dentist. Yeah. What you're saying is certainly true. Absolutely true. Huge mistake parents make to try and enforce their will, especially with regard to careers, you know, on a child. I talked about my dad and the oil thing here maybe one night, you know, it was a similar kind of thing. And you're absolutely right. What are we trying to raise as parents? What are we trying to raise?
Responsible adult human beings.
Responsible, self-sufficient adults. Just to put those together. A responsible, self-sufficient adult. So if you do the job right, Does the child need you anymore? No. You didn't force them to be the doctor or whatever else it was. You gave them the tools to figure life out on their own. You gave them the instruction. You taught them to swim. They're the ones that have to cross the English Channel. Okay? But you teach them how to swim, and they'll make it across the English Channel that we call life.
Well, I think the biggest danger in letting them go their own way and in child worship is that, gee, they get out of college and everybody else is going to love them like they're loved at home. And maybe they're not very well liked, and that's going to be a real huge shock to them when they get out into the real world. And maybe you're not going to be the everything to everyone else.
Amen. Frequently,
yeah.
That's where the kids lose their faith, too. They were not raised up so that their faith was their own. This goes right to what you were saying a moment ago, you know. You've imposed your faith on them. Then they leave the house, and they leave behind your faith, because you're not there. Now what? We lose an awful lot of our kids, you know, that way. Because when they finally are out on their own, they haven't learned how to be on their own. They didn't make these decisions themselves. Jimmy.
This is Michael. I will compare this or put it on the same. Ephesians 6:4.
Okay, everybody, Ephesians 6.
Yes, the way of teaching. You live it. You have 1 Timothy.
Did you say just verse 4?
Yes.
I'll just read it so everybody can hear it. But Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Okay? Reads almost like a proverb, doesn't it?
Thank you, Jimmy.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, we'll quit early tonight. I did have, you know, another session to get into, but I'll save it for next week. Really glad we had all that feedback. You know, again, I don't regret it at all when classes go no longer than I might expect. Do we have any other comment or question? Okay, Jerry, would you give me some prayer?